Dana Brinkel, and I'm a research technologist and part-time instructor for chemistry labs at Penn State Altoona for the past 12 years. I'm also a graduate student for the LDT program at Penn State World Campus, and I currently use social media for my learning and teaching.
So what kind of activities do students do in your class?
Usually they come in and we do chemistry experiments where they perform, obviously read procedure, follow it, and then they turn in a report. So I added the additional social media aspect so they could learn current events in chemistry. So that way they could see current research, what is being done in the field as it's being done, rather than something that's just theoretical that they're learning in lecture and in lab. And it was scary at first, but it actually really worked out very well.
I think a lot of people find introducing new techniques and tools into their teaching can be a little scary at first. What kind of hesitations did you have about using social media in your class?
I think it was pretty much like trying to see if my students would actually participate. I was afraid that they would just not do it. So I kind of had to hype it up, and it's weird because the students are skeptical too, or they're just not used to using it for learning in general. So yeah, there's skepticism on both sides, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that they're not used to using it for learning, making the gap between personal use and educational use can be kind of a big hurdle.
It's good to have set up guidelines, like specific requirements, like an assignment with graded points to it, because that's motivation for them to actually complete the assignment. If there's not some kind of points to motivate them to actually do the assignment, they're not going to do it. Some requirements, I have guidelines, but I let them give them some freedom to choose their own area of interest. However, I do give them recommended websites that they have to go on, rather than because they don't know which websites are appropriate, which ones are really good chemistry resources. Certain websites that I know that they're going to find really good information, but then I give them the freedom to choose, you know, any topic that they find on there. But they find like current events, and then they have to summarize. They have to find an article on there, and they have to summarize the article in their own words on Yammer. And then they have to come up with 10 questions for their peers to respond to. And then I said, add some new information, but I don't give them any restrictions for that. They're allowed to go add anything they want from any website, YouTube video, anything creative. Add more information to this, create more information to your leader's original post. And I know you said earlier, how do I model that? I actually show them an example. And it's nice because now that I've done it for some, you know, semesters, I could show good, you know, student examples.
So since you've given your students some freedom in choosing the content, have you had any interesting experiences with the choices that students have made about what they want to contribute?
Yes, I did. I actually had a student, he thought he would be smart, a smart ass pretty much, because I didn't really make the specific requirement as a scientific article. So he picked a social article on one of the websites, and it was about female sexuality portrayed in for like comic books. So it was kind of embarrassing, you know, and I'm like, I couldn't, you know, I pretty much had to say, this is a social experiment. It's not, you know, more of a scientific experiment. And I'd explained, you know, that wasn't what we were looking for.
And that probably helped the rest of the students in the class figure out what was acceptable if they didn't already. No.
Oh, they knew. He knew too. I think he was just pushing the limits. And it was funny because the students didn't respond. So then he actually got embarrassed about it, then went back and actually did the appropriate thing. He did an appropriate article. So it was funny to see he actually self-regulated himself. So he didn't get the reaction from me or the other peers that he thought he would. So then it actually ended up being a serious conversation about how his culture deals with women, and how it's different from our culture. And then it went off from that, and he did another article that was actually on chemistry. So it was really neat to see.
I think that's such a great example of how someone is poking around the norms of the community and trying to figure out their place in it, and then maybe adjusting their behavior based on what the other members of the community think is acceptable.
Yeah, it definitely, social media gives some peer pressure on the norm, I think. Definitely, it does.
I'm curious how you see using social media, how it helps your students learn.
Well, I think that a lot of classrooms, the students are just sitting and listening. They're not really participating or actively involved. And I think using social media kind of helps them communicate with their communication skills so they can, you know, practice talking or practice written communication with each other, which is important. It also allows them to learn by inactive learning, which is observing others. So they can see, oh, wow, that person is really good at speaking. Or, because I use VoiceThread too, so they post on VoiceThread, so they get to speak. Also, it helps them with their written communication, so they can, you know, they can see someone that writes really well, and they're like, oh, I really like how that person writes. And then they start imitating, you want to imitate that person, and you want to learn from them. Looking at peer models and having an instructor, like, model that kind of communication skills really helps them out.
So I'm curious, since you've already kind of gotten them going by linking it to a grade, are they posting anything outside of the assignment, or is it mostly restricted to just the assignment use?
Strictly to assignment use. And I don't think it's because of lack of interest. I think generally people are just time constrained. However, I think just getting them involved with it shows them, hey, this is a way to communicate with people, because it's going to be used, you know, eventually in the workplace, or they have to communicate through at least email, which is similar. It's the same kind of skill set that you're trying to teach them, appropriate ways to interact written just professionally on, you know, a system. So I really think even if they don't go beyond that, they might transfer it, I guess, to other areas.
Over the course of your past year using Yammer, have you learned anything that you'd like to share with other teachers who are maybe trying this out for the first time? Any advice, tips, or warnings?
Bouncing your ideas off of someone, like before you have the students do it, another instructor, like how I went to instructional designer, it's very helpful to get other people's, lots of people, you know, share your idea and see what people's feedback is. I think that helps. If you try it, do it on a small scale. Do it with one class. If you have like 5 classes, I wouldn't try to like do all of them all at once. Try it out in one class and see how it goes. And then maybe you can fine tune it so it's easy to manage, and you can work it out more efficiently. But it does increase communication in your class, which is nice. So students will talk more with each other and they do interact with you more. So I think that's a great benefit. I did have some professionals actually come in and join Yammer because I did an external network. So they actually corresponded with my students and the professionals getting on there and answering the questions. But that was another interesting aspect, is getting experts involved. It adds another resource to it. But I get worried too, because it's like, are they going to be liable? Like the physician assistant, you know, talking about her patients, and then you're like, and there are people talking about their jobs and patent information. There's a little gray area of legality there too. So I get worried for my professionals because they use their real name, you know, and I don't want them to get in trouble either. So that's another issue.
What kind of social support systems do you reach out to?
Well, since I'm in the learning design technology program, it is nice to talk with, you know, other students in the program. When we participate in discussions, they can talk about it, you know, and it that is nice. That's very supporting. Other students that have actually, you know, students that enjoy it in my class, that have used it, that's supporting. I've had a student come up to me, she's like, oh my goodness, she was a farmer. She works at a pharmacy as an assistant. So when she did her article, she looked up, you know, chemistry involved with pharmaceutical drugs, and she was reading the article, and she's like, I got so interested. I spent hours. She's like, I got so interested in this topic, I just kept looking up more information. She's like, I spent like 3 or 4 hours reading about it. She's like, I was so interested in it and learning about it, and that made me really proud. I had two students that were communicating, and they've been dating now for like 2 years because they actually, you know, were a little bit shy in class, and so they started like communicating on Yammer. And then I saw them in the hall, and I was like, they were like holding hands, like, oh my gosh, you know, that was cute. That was, and that made me happy. It was like to establish like relationships between, you know, that was nice. I don't know, those things kind of keep you upbeat. I kind of like that.
That's awesome. Well, let's end on the note of love and exploration.
All right, that sounds good. Dude, thank you, Maria.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and experiences. I think everybody's going to learn a lot from it.